Barrow Today. Barrow Economy, Technology and Economic Change. In Barrow today, subsistence hunting remains an important source of livelihood. Before the arrival of whaling ships in the 1890s, subsistence hunting and trading with neighboring peoples were the only means for obtaining necessary goods. With the advent of commercial whaling, however, the wage economy was introduced and has remained an important aspect of Barrow's finance. The new economy has brought a new technology with it. Dog teams have been replaced by the speedier snow machines, enabling a greater exploitation of the Eskimos' natural environment. Today, a man may hunt the sea, tundra, and inland waters in less time than was previously possible. Now, a man may hold a wage-earning job in town, on the oil fields, or in cities, and still find time to hunt. Willie Seilach remembers the difficulties of traveling by dog team.
I travel the dog team when the hunting in the tundra. Sometimes we never get anything someday, and someday we got some. We got hard times when we travel somewhere, they're looking for food for my family. And sometimes we travel the stormy, the windy, we never stop, except we go down to the village to get some food. When they sort that food, we always travel with a dog team before. We always do that way.
How do you travel today?
And today, we never use any more dogs. That we use skido, that good for the hauling, the ice, and they go up to hunt in the tundra with skido. We always do that way right now, because the everything changed now.
Alan Chance, I run a general store here in Barrow. We handle groceries, dry goods, cosmetics, sporting goods, snow machines, outboard motors, shoes and clothing and yardage and, you know, trim, zippers, rickrack, just about anything that there's a need for up in here, you know, that we feel there's a need.
What are some items that are most important to the villagers that you carry?
Well, probably we're handling the largest stock of snow machine parts in Alaska. And it's kind of a necessity of life to own. I mean, you've got to haul ice in the wintertime for your water. You need it for getting game. It's for hunting and all that. I mean, it's so much faster than the dog teams, and a person that's holding a job may not be making much money working for the governor, and then I can still go out on a weekend or take his vacation when game is nearby, and he uses this machine for game. Even in the summertime, they put their snow machines in their boats, and they run them all over the tundra. In the summertime, there's no snow. I mean, it's just over the grass. But it helps them maintain their meat. I mean, for hunting, goose hunting there, and it's an important part of life there.
I don't go by talk team no more. That's too slow. They're more dependable, but they're too slow. I don't have that much time available. Being working and everything of this type. If I wasn't working, then I'd be more than glad to take a talk team. But since I'm working and time is precious, I took a skido. It can take a lot and take your chances just about every time you go out with a skido. It's especially if you're alone. If you have somebody with you, then you're okay.
My name is Joseph Upikson. Now, prior to the Caucasians coming into our land, we had no way of measuring man's time and his worth in dollars and cents. Now, my people lived off the land, and the land has yielded games like caribou and all the wildlife, the fur-bearing animals, for pelts. And then we have the rivers. These rivers have been good to us in the sense that they yield fish, good fish. So we also have the ocean. The ocean has been real good to my people in that every spring they harvest what we call the whale. Now, the Eskimo will form his own crew on a 28-foot skin boat, and with his skill can bag a 60-ton whale.
Especially in summertime, it's when I do just about all my hunting, during summer. And my brother and I went for it. Yeah, we have our own boat. And for the first time, last spring, it was when we got a whale. And we got our crew going too. And we finally got a whale. So this spring we're planning on going out again. We're hoping to get another one.
Now, when I talk about the Eskimo going out and getting his whale, I'm also saying that there are very, very, very few people in this world that has ever killed a whale, especially from a 28-foot skin boat. Now, when a crew gets a whale, you have what you call in the Caucasian society a corporation. Now, the beauty of my people's corporation is that it's automatic once you get a whale. Now, the way they divide the whale is beautiful in that you can compare the bagging of a whale with striking oil. Now, the stockholders in an oil company, when they find out that their drill rigs has struck oil, what they do is they celebrate with champagne. Now, in the case of my people, when they get the whale, there is a certain portion of this whale that would be similar to the champagne parties that the stockholders go on for their celebration. Now, the captain or the crew gets this certain portion of the whale, then we celebrate. And then the sharing is pretty much the same as a corporation that is on a dollar economy, only they get their share of the whale.
Yes. All right, my name's Edward Hobson. I like to go out hunt, but I like to, right now in the wintertime, you know, I got so involved in all community activities, city council, school board, and some church and all that, you know, board meetings and along to the board of directors for the Barrow Utilities and all that, you know, you're pretty well occupied. I still like to hunt, and particularly in the summertime I had a request for when the school closes in summertime, especially boarding time, I will be requesting probably for use of my annual leave time and then maybe some more without pay leave for catch a few caribou and walrus and things like that. That's when I wanted to go out.
Now, when I said that it's very difficult for us to measure time and its worth in dollars and cents, because between us and the game, there is no middleman, there is no corruption, in that when we stalk our game and when we bag it, it is totally ours. And in there, I don't see any 25% federal income tax, or 16% of that federal income tax for state tax. These are the beauty of getting something whole.
Subsistence hunting, as Joe Upickson has pointed out, has not changed much with the introduction of a dollar economy. But younger villagers, lacking the experience of their elders, have less ability and a different awareness for relating to their Arctic environment.
How far did you go to get to caribou today?
Same place.
Same place. You did to that today?
Yeah.
How'd you go out there?
With a ski boat.
Did you go with your father?
With my brother.
You go out hunting?
Not very much, hardly.
You gonna go hunting this summer?
I don't know. I may go to Seattle or something. I don't know. If I say, oh, money.
What are you
going to
do tonight?
We just hang around the hut with polar bears or emails. Nothing to do, or go to the show.
What's on at the show tonight?
Love bug.
Love bug?
Yeah, polar bears.
Oh, yeah. The Arctic.
Which one?
Bonnie and Clyde at the Arctic Theater.
You're going to see that tonight?
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm going to the church, go sing. Yeah.
You think that's a good movie?
What?
You think that's a good movie?
Yeah, I've seen it before.
Yeah?
And I'm going to go see it again.
What's it all about?
It's about a man and a lady. They were robbing and, you know, killing people. Robbing for kicks, maybe.
What happens at the end of that movie?
They got, yeah, you know, they got killed. Lots of men, you know, with machine guns, they shot them. Many bullets, lots of bullets in them.
Well, I think our young people are making a living with only what they know, and we sometimes are disgusted when we looked at them making a living without thought of the kind of living that we have known. And it seems to make conflict between our young people and us. They know the present way of life, and we, the older people, know the old ways of life. And it's kind of hard to communicate sometimes with our young people. So maybe they think that, what are we talking about anyway, when we talk about dog team and the hunting. Hunting, of course, still continues, but the older ways, the older means of hunting is simpler. We are not afraid of being so cold because our clothing are warm, and all our reindeer or caribou, and we hardly suffer due to cold. We know how to survive out in the tundra, because we also know how to make snow houses, but our youngsters just didn't know much.
You have been listening to Economy in Barrel, Technology and Economic Change, the first of two programs on the economy of Barrel, Alaska's largest Eskimo community and northernmost city. Barrel Today was written and produced by Roger and Karen McPherson, with the support of the Alaska Rural Schools Project, Department of Education, and KUAC of the University of Alaska. The voices you have heard were those of Willie Sylock, Al Shantz, Nelson Abakana, Joe Upickson, Edward Hobson, two teenagers, and Reverend Samuel Simmons. And the music was performed by Pete Suvalik's dance group. This has been your announcer, Jeff Kennedy. Join us next week on Barrow Today for a program on wage and welfare economies. Barrow Today. Wage and welfare economies. Boom, bust. Barrow's remote location gives it the advantage of a wide, undisturbed hunting area on both land and sea, and the disadvantage of being economically dependent upon government agencies and short-term construction with limited local employment opportunities. In spite of unemployment problems, few people depend on the welfare economy. Lois Conway, the state welfare representative in Barrow, explains the Barrow welfare program and villagers' attitudes toward it.
I'm Lois Conway. I work with the State of Alaska Division of Public Welfare. I'm the Barrow representative for that division. Yeah, it seems to me people here are much prefer to be independent and not rely on themselves and work and hunt when they're able to. Most of the people that I see on public assistance from the state are people who are not able to work for one reason or another, or one-parent families where financial assistance is needed.
Oil strikes in Prudhoe Bay, 200 miles east of Barrow, have recently created job opportunities for Barrow people. Regular planned flights to the oil fields are provided by the oil companies. However, the hours are rough, the work unrewarding, and promotion requires long experience. Edward Itta, a young Eskimo who has worked for one of the oil companies, describes the situation. Then Al Shantz, owner of the largest general store in the village, will discuss the impact of the new employment on his business.
I worked up in the oil fields for about a year, and working for one contractor company in a drilling rig. And I liked the job. It wasn't that bad. I really didn't like it that much, but the pay was good, which is just about all you can say for it. We worked 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week, for 28 days at a time. And then you got 2 weeks off, came back, worked again. 28 days is quite a while, but some of these other people that have this other job with ARCO that work a week on and a week off, they've got it pretty good. Because they can work for a week and make their money that way and come back and do what they want to do. Like, if they want to stay with their family for a week, that's okay. And they can go out hunting. And everything for them balances out. Like, they can work a week and make their money, which they have to have in order to live. And part of their culture thing is on the hunting thing and the family. So they get a week to do that, and I think the whole setup's really nice in that sense.
The oil companies now, there is an impact here, and I would venture to say that there's probably somewhere between 70 and 90 people that are employed in the oil fields. We have some that are work a week on and a week off, and every Monday an airplane brings the load over here and takes the load back. I think they take 8 or 9. Some of them go for 2 weeks and come back for a week, and some of them are gone for 4 weeks and come back for 2 weeks. It's hard, you know, really to say, I mean, who is working, who's not. There seems to be, you know, I mean, a considerable amount of cash in the village, but in going through the checks, I mean, we have a social services program up in here, which is a welfare. It's a BIA program funded to the city, and it's works pretty good, and that if somebody is hurting and they need immediate cash, they can write them a check. Or if for some of the families, I mean, they feel that they wouldn't wisely spend the money, they may put a charge account, you know, for $30 a week or something like that. The food stamp is a program here that hasn't been explained thoroughly to these people here, and they're not taking advantage of it. It's a tremendous help for the people that are on a off-the-land economy in the wintertime. I mean, they don't have work. If you can work 6 months out of the year and draw unemployment for 6 months, you know, I mean, it helps out. And then those, while you're drawing unemployment, you're able to go out and hunt and you know, supplement your income there.
The typical household in Barrow often includes a number of basic households. Basic family units might be living all in one house. There might be an old couple, the grandparents, their children. Maybe some of them are grown. Some of them are single and living at home, perhaps. Also, some of them might be married with their own families, living there in the same home. And when it comes to eligibility for welfare, actually the only people receiving welfare assistance would be ordinarily the grandparents. Those are the two included in the welfare budget. However, if these older children don't happen to have jobs at the time because of the economic situation, they might still be dependent on one another for assistance, and often the grandparents share in expenses of living for the entire family, including these adult children living at home. This is so when you say that there's so many people receiving welfare assistance, it's not really a true picture of how many are dependent. There are many families who just really choose not to apply for assistance. I know of 3 or 4 families at the time that would probably be eligible for assistance if they applied, but they choose not to.
Family cohesiveness, traditional sharing, and varied wage and subsistence incomes contribute to the survival of the Barrow people in the Arctic environment. One man may support a family by his job and hunt during his vacations. Nelson Avakana and Edward Itta describe the demands of the wage economy and the decisions a man must make in order to earn a living.
Well, when I first got off school, Now, I was planning on going to college, and in order for me to go to college, since my folks didn't have no money available, I had to work. So I started off working for the Dew Line, to Federal Electric, and I was hoping to work at least 1 year and get enough for my tuition and go back to school. But I didn't get a chance to go back since I started working for Dew Line. Then my mom and dad was more or less dependent on me. I had to send money for them to buy groceries and everything. And then I didn't get a chance to go back to school then.
Well, you generally start off as roustabout, and that's, you have to do that in order so you can get to know the whole rig and all that stuff. So everybody starts off that way, and you work up to being a roughneck, and which is better than being a roustabout. But they start off just like anybody else. They start you from scratch, and after a while you either make it as a roughneck or you don't. You continue to be a roustabout, or they'll let you go. As yet, I don't know of any Eskimo that's a driller yet up there, but there's one or two that are getting close to it. You have to have so much time, minimum time, in order to get to know the great majority of things you have to know in order to be a driller. I mean, it's all up to the individual himself as to how far, if he wants to become a driller, he can do it. And they want, I'm sure, to have some native drillers that are going to be around a long time, because who else is better suited for it up here than natives? And if they could keep the natives as drillers, it'd be a lifetime employer, probably. And he could, in that sense, he'd be a boss. He'd be boss of his own group. Like, he'll know his crew.
In the past, Barrow's economy has been seasonal, characterized as a boom-bust economy because of the periods of rapid construction followed by inactivity. The city of Barrow recognizes the need for more local employment opportunities and is working on imaginative planning to this end. The city manager, Jack Chenoweth, feels a new airport facility offers a partial solution.
The city is also preparing final plans for the Barrow Air Terminal, an air terminal project to be built near the present airport, to include a ticket counter and restaurant and gift shops, things that you traditionally find in airport terminals, a flight services station for the Federal Aviation Administration, and a 40-room hotel and state office building complex to house the offices of the district judge, the welfare department, the Fish and Game Board, and other state agencies. The whole package comes to about $2.5 million. The funding is promised by various federal and state agencies, and construction probably will begin in the next construction season, which would be September of 1971. The final word on the airport terminal, in terms of jobs, full-time or part-time jobs would be provided in the building and maintenance of this airport facility. In a town with a chronically high unemployment rate, it would be quite a blessing to have 40 or 50 or even 70 new jobs available, full or part-time, for the people in this community.
In the Arctic, heating costs are high, food from the store expensive, and jobs scarce. Past studies of Barrow's economy have urged more planning and cooperation to prevent sudden flooding of the economy, resulting in later unemployment. At present, planning cannot create enough jobs for the expanding workforce, and out-migration has become an inevitable choice for many job seekers. Oil activity has brought a brief period of employment to the North Slope, but few permanent jobs have been created for natives. Villagers combine seasonal wage earning with subsistence hunting and balance new technologies with old skills to create a stable economic base in a time of change.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Wage and Welfare Economies, Boom Bust, the second of two programs on the economy of Barrow, Alaska's largest Eskimo community and northernmost city. Barrow Today was written and produced by Roger and Karen McPherson, with the support of the Alaska Rural Schools Project, Department of Education, and KUAC-FM of the University of Alaska. The voices you have heard were those of Lois Conway, Edward Itoff, Al Chant, Milton Avakana, and Jack Chenoweth. Music was performed by Pete Suvalik's Dance Group, and this has been your announcer, Jeff Kennedy. Join us next week on Barrow Today for a program on tenement health in an Arctic environment.